Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Just as a quick note for everybody who is in Vancouver for any of the conferences ongoing over the weekend and into next week, if you want to meet up with Shad and I, please just send us an email. We will be around, especially VRIC. And happy to meet up with all of you. Have a coffee, have a beer, even just walk around the conference floor. Mark, let's start off by recapping some of the data that we have seen. U.S. focused data. Recently, we had Q4 GDP that came in still relatively strong. Expectations were for that still, though, to come in strong. And then we also had the PCE deflator, which is what the Fed watches closely. The core rate came down to 4.4%, down from 4.7%. So almost in line with what the Fed is targeting, kind of for their interest rates. Mark, your takeaway from Q4 GDP and that PCE data.
Yeah, great. So yeah, Corey, so I think let's begin with that GDP. And you're right, it did come in strong, relatively strong for the U.S., about 2.9%, a little bit faster than, say, the Bloomberg consensus was for. But again, it's sort of like what we saw, maybe the mirror image. Remember in the first half of last year, U.S. GDP contracted, and it was mostly about trade and inventories. Now the U.S. economy reported expansion, but it's also mostly because of trade and inventories. The trade and inventories account for about two-thirds of that growth the U.S. reported. The other surprise to it was that government spending was strong, up another 3.7% in Q4. And so what this means is that when you take away these things, the reason you take away the trade and inventories, government spending, is partly because you want to get a sense of the underlying demand, the fundamental, like what's the core, what's the real signal? And that's pretty weak. And that is to say, the measure that economists call it is real final sales to private purchasers, private domestic purchasers. And that is sort of the real signal from the GDP, 0.2%, which means that the U.S. economy practically stagnated, the underlying tone, and we cannot count on trade and inventories to continue to contribute like this. And so what does this mean? I think that people are taking away from this Q4 GDP. And those who are looking for a soft landing, I think, are a little bit more challenged. And those who are looking for stagnation or worse in Q1 and Q2 probably have the wind at their backs. We also had durable good orders. And even though they were up big, 5.6%, more than twice what the market expected, the bulk of that can be accounted for by Boeing, who saw a big jump in orders. And if you subtract Boeing orders, aircraft orders, also for the military, those defense aircraft were up over 15%. When you get rid of those transportation equipment, defense equipment, you're looking at a contraction. And this is a nice, a useful measure of capital expenditures and sort of the pipeline going forward. So I'd say the takeaway from the GDP number is, yes, the U.S. economy bounced back after contracting in the first half of last year, but the underlying quality of it remains poor. And those of us who think the U.S. economy is going to contract probably find some support in that data. The other big report, as you mentioned, was the PCE deflator. And, you know, in some ways, because the CPI number comes out first, it really steals some of its thunder. What I find most striking about the deflator is that for the first time now, that core deflator, 4.4%, is below the upper end of the Fed funds target range, and they're going to likely hike in the coming days. But also strikes me about it is that in December, the Federal Reserve's dot plot suggested 4.8%. And again, we got 4.4%. Back in September, they thought it'd be 4.5% at the end of the year. Again, we came in below that. So earlier on in the cycle, inflation was surprising the Fed to the upside. And now it's surprising to the downside, not by a lot, but it's really the direction here. So the takeaway, I think, is that many people will find comfort in this, in the softening of inflation, and justifying, sort of further confirming what the market had priced in, which is a 25 basis point rate hike from the Fed on February 1st.
Well, yeah, Mark, we have that to look forward to next week, and that seems to be the consensus, a 25 basis point hike. But when you look at this data, the GDP number, and you strip it from the trade and the inventories, like we did when it was negative GDP, it really shows a picture of a more muted or almost flat growth, and it's not nearly as exciting. So people in the media, in the financial media, went far too negative when it was, you know, the two quarters back to back of negative GDP, like, oh gosh, the world is ending. Then they went far too positive on this one. I saw probably a dozen articles talking about U.S. economy grows, the defying recession fears, we're in for the soft landing, the Fed's going to thread the needle. And the same thing's happening on the PCE deflator. Like, hey, if the inflation's coming in softer than the Fed expected, that's a good thing. Mission accomplished. Is it possible that people have just swung to both ends of the extreme and that we're actually kind of in a slow growth, muted, still stagflation area where we still have higher than expected inflation? We're not at 2% or below, but we're also just kind of stagnating in growth.
I go with the stagnation and growth, and there are headwinds. And one of the big headwinds for a lot of us is coming from residential investment. This is home building. And we've seen it contract at an annualized rate of over 25% in the last two quarters. We also know that wages aren't really keeping pace with inflation. And so this is why, partly why, I think we saw consumption come in actually lower in Q4 than we did in Q3. So here's what I think is going to happen, is that inflation, US CPI, rose at an annualized rate of more than 10% in Q1 and Q2 last year. The base effect then is going to see a big drop in inflation in the coming months. I think, to your point, Shad, it's really a question, not so much has inflation peaked, but how fast can it approach the Fed's target range? And this is why I think Powell talks about the core services, excluding shelter, which is the key there, is thought to be wage growth. And I think that when you look at this core measures, I think that we might be able to fall to maybe 3.5%, but that last move, it might be harder to do, especially as it comes, say, in the second half of the year. So the first half of the year, we get a drop in the U.S. inflation, and then it stabilizes. And as it stabilizes, there'll be more, even though it's above target, the market is saying the Federal Reserve will cut rates by 25 basis points towards the end of the year. And it's not just the Fed, by the way, that's going to cut interest rates. The market says the Bank of Canada will cut at least 50 basis points, and that the Bank of England also will cut by the end of this year. So a real reversal is what the market's anticipating.
Mark, what do you think will make the Fed, the other central banks, actually start cutting rates? What data do you think could push them over? Is it market reaction, say a big down leg in the markets that could push them to start cutting? So many people are talking about when central banks will start cutting rates. In your eyes, what's going to be the trigger?
Yeah, that's a good question, Corey. I think that, we think about the trigger, it can only come, it seems to me, from one or two things. Leaving aside some kind of systemic shock. And one of those things is a dramatic deterioration in the labor market, which is hard to envision right now, even though it's just January. And part of the reason why is we're seeing weekly jobless claims fall in the U.S. They've now been below 200,000 for the second consecutive week. So I think the first thing we need to at least get the Federal Reserve is to see a deterioration in the job market. The second thing, I think, is a dramatic drop in inflation. That's still to be seen if we're going to get that. I think that the idea that just because the economy contracts, that might change policy of the central bankers, I don't buy that. Remember, first half of last year, the U.S. economy contracted, and the Fed was still raising interest rates beginning in March. I think the Bank of England has already acknowledged that they're going to be in a recession. Their economy, they say, will not grow until next year. And they're still raising interest rates. The market expects a 50 basis point hike from them next week. So I think it has to be inflation falls sharply or the job market deteriorates. But I don't think that an overall economy contracting is probably a sufficient driver of getting central banks to cut rates later this year.
Well, Mark, what about some of the other data that seems to be at odds with the soft landing narrative, like manufacturing? It has been weak for about 10 months in a row. You brought up the housing market there and that home building's down 25%, but I know the home, I know that the housing market's had a little spike up over the last month or so because rates have come down, but in general, the housing market has been weak for since the beginning of the year, but really since the last half of 2022. And it doesn't show any signs of booming again like it was back in 2020 or 2021. And so there's some other factors that still point to weakness in the economy. We still have an inverted yield curve. That's usually a harbinger of times to come. When you look at manufacturing, you look at the real estate market, when you look at the yield curve, when you look at the weaker retail numbers, the fact that consumers now have record amounts of credit card debt, is it possible that a deepening economic woe next year, as this year unfolds, could be the trigger that gets them to start cutting rates later in the year?
I don't know. I mean, you're right that there's a lot of things that suggest a headwind. I mean, I think about those earlier this month, we saw retail sales fall more than 1% for the second month in a row. Same thing with manufacturing output, to your point, more than 1% for for November and December. But I think that, you know, the market, you know, you think about what's happened this year, and I think you're right that a lot of those financial variables, like the different measure of the yield curve, money supply measured by M2, all pointing to dramatic weakness, especially for people who are who are more influenced by those financial variables and the monetarist approach. But again, I think that the economy, I think that the Federal Reserve is willing to risk a further slowdown in the economy. And the market is not taking it seriously. The market is not taking, I think, central banks seriously. When you think about what they've done to financial assets already this year, booming, which is to say the financial conditions have eased. So the financial conditions are unwinding what the central banks are doing. And I think this is a challenge for the central banks. And this is why I think that, for example, next week when the Federal Reserve hikes 25 basis points, Chairman Powell is going to have to make it sound hawkish. I think he's going to have to either push back against market expectations strongly, which is why I thought that there's a good case to be made for a 50 basis point hike to sort of rein in this market's enthusiasm, thinking that, already looking past the Fed tightening and looking for that ease and to rebuild the Fed's anti-inflation credibility that might have been tarnished by being slow out of the block. But the 25 basis point hike seems to be what everybody's talking about. And if that's what they deliver, how is Powell going to push back against the easing of financial conditions, the market unwinding some of his work? And the same thing in some ways for the ECB, they've got a challenge as well. They're likely to hike 50 basis points. And in some ways, ECB President Lagarde already pre-committed to that. And the market is already pricing in a good chance at 50 basis points at the March meeting as well. So what kind of effect can they be? I mean, so it seems to me that with such a hawkish bias that the risk seems to me that the Fed is somewhat more hawkish and the ECB is somewhat less hawkish than the extreme that the market's pricing in. And the Bank of England, inflation's firm there and labor market's strong, wage growth is strong, but the economy is very weak. And how can, Governor Bailey is going to have to, he's going to hike 50 basis points. Could he signal that they're almost done? The market's pricing in one more 25 basis point hike after next week's move. And maybe he pushes back against that. Maybe he can declare, like the Bank of Canada has done, that they're ready for a pause.
So looking at the markets then, Mark, there's clearly been a bit of a sugar high over the last about 4 months in a wide range of sectors. A lot of sectors have done well. Do you think this sugar high is coming to an end? And if you do, what sectors do you think are most at risk?
Yeah, Corey, I thought that there was a chance last week, but this past week, the S&P 500 jumped above the downtrend line from last January. That came in at about 40.10 earlier this week. And right now we're trading above 40.70. We're trading almost 2 percentage points above that trend line. And so I think that, the U.S. stock market is having a good day here ahead of the weekend. What's going to be interesting, I think, come Monday is that China comes back from its week-long holiday. And while it's been gone, that index of Chinese stocks, mainland stocks that trade in Hong Kong, is up almost 6.5%. And in the foreign exchange market, especially among the G10 currencies, it's really the Aussie that has been a good, that's been sort of like the market, like foreign exchange traders, China play. And the Aussie this week is up about 2%, leading the majors. And so to me, this China story, China's been off the people's radar screens this past week as they've been on holiday. But we come back on Monday, and I think we get a big Chinese stock market rally, and the RMB can also strengthen. It's really the market's anticipating this. And so I think that's why the Aussie strength, the mainland share that trade in Hong Kong rallying. So we'll have to see what happens. But some of the anecdotal news suggested stronger traffic, whether it's train traffic, pedestrian, car traffic, and more entertainment, movie theater tickets, and other types of tourist destinations for people within China. And so I think this, one of the themes that is underlying this honeymoon, this sugar buzz, has really been this looking past the COVID problems that China has now and anticipating the world's second largest economy to really to open up and to get over this COVID crisis and to really add to the world's growth, helping lift commodity prices like copper, aluminum, iron ore prices. And we see its rippling effect through the FX market.
Okay. Mark, man, a lot to take in because of all the data that came out. And again, we're just kind of waiting for that Fed meeting and policy hike next week. But I think it's pretty much priced in. As you said, though, how is Powell going to present it? Probably on the hawkish side. But we even got that Bank of Canada rate hike, and now they're in pause, probably leading to the Fed here pausing very soon. Markets, though, man, I don't know how much longer they're going to keep going higher. Maybe they will continue. Maybe the bottom is in, but maybe this also is just a rally and still a much broader bear market. Mark, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat again next week. And again, everybody, if you're in Vancouver, want to meet up with Shad and I, please send us an email. Thanks for your time, Mark. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.